Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Very exciting day for us today.
Yeah, we have Patrick O'Connell. He owns the Inn at Little Washington. It's one of the best restaurants in America, and it's a personal favorite of
also
ours.
Also one of the best inns in America.
Yeah.
So it's a Relais Gourmand, Relais and Chateau. Just really...
Mobile Five Diamond restaurant, Mobile Five Diamond inn as well. We went there. We had a great time.
I mean, Patrick was named the top chef in the country at one point. I mean, it's just amazing, amazing, amazing place where, and I can't wait to talk to Patrick.
A few years back, Mark and our chef at the time and our partner Lou and Mark's wife and Lou's wife went down to the Inn at Little Washington, had dinner, stayed at the inn, and it was really...
What a
gracious,
wonderful
elegant,
experience.
Beautiful place.
Worth the 6.5-hour ride each way, okay?
Worth
it just to go for dinner and stay there.
With the stay over. And we're going to link you to Patrick's book and Patrick's place on our site. We're going to talk with him in just a moment.
I always think it's funny. Every once in a while, I'll fill out one of these surveys for one of the magazines or something, these food-related magazines. And like, well, how far have you... What's the farthest you've ever driven for a meal? 2,871 miles.
Yeah, you're a little kooky, though, so am I. All right, but before we get to Patrick O'Connell and real food, I want to talk to you about imitation food.
Imitation food.
Yeah, here's an article. This is from an article in the New York Times.
Really imitation food?
The true imitation of real McCoys, which are fake. Oddly, that's my little... A few kitchen cupboards are stocked with emulsifiers like polysorbate 60 or soy lecithin, to say nothing of red dye number 40. As a result, creating precise facsimile of a Hostess Twinkie, the snack cake, is more or less impossible. Why would anybody want to do that? And as these multisyllabic and numbered ingredients are all vital to the product's look and taste. Is that what you call it, taste? But with the aid of the Twinkies brand bake set, a budding chef can at least approximate the treat's tubular shape, spongy texture, and cream-filled center. We're not saying you can produce a Twinkie, said Bruce Aronson, president of A. Aronson Incorporated, the kitchenware maker in New York that created the bake set. We call what you can produce a Twinkie-shaped mini-cake.
So what they're saying here is... Twinkies, you can't have a Twinkie, so we want you to be able to bake a Twinkie.
When this is a bake set for your kids that will let your kid bake a Twinkie, but you can't really bake a Twinkie because, first of all, Twinkies aren't baked. Secondly, they're made with a bunch of chemicals that are probably dangerous for your kids.
But Twinkies last for like 7,000 years and they're wrapped in plastic. Why would you ever need to bake your own Twinkie?
So, and the other thing is Twinkies aren't food. No, they actually are food. But my question is... If a Twinkie is an imitation cake, these kids are disappointed because they can't make a Twinkie. They make an imitation Twinkie out of cake. That's like, oh, I wish it was as good as a Twinkie, but I'm stuck with cake. What's wrong with you?
It's a pretend Twinkie.
But it's cake. It's real cake. It's better than a Twinkie. An imitation is real. I'm sorry, but it's real. The kitchen centerpiece is a no-stick pan with 8 cylindrical cavities, batters poured inside and baked. When the cakes are done, a syringe-like injector is used to flood their middles with sugary filling. The imitation Twinkie can then be transported to work or school in the set's plastic carrying case, which is fashioned to resemble the cowboy hat-wearing mascot, Twinkie the Kid.
Twinkie the
And the
kid.
Only reason it's filled with sugary filling is because your mom doesn't have high fructose corn syrup at home.
Like the real Twinkie has.
Remember, real Twinkie, which is fake.
Now, I haven't had a Twinkie in a million years, but do you remember Twinkies? First of all, they are addictive because they're filled with corn syrup and sugary cake, and when you're a kid, it's just something that you want to be eating all the time. But as a parent... Mm. Not only do you want your kid to have a Twinkie, you want to make him an imitation Twinkie.
But the thing is, I'd rather him have an imitation Twinkie than a real Twinkie.
Except if I'm going to make my kid an imitation Twinkie, I'm going to make him some cake.
Well, that's what it is.
And I'm going to put some real filling in it and say, because a Twinkie is an imitation of a cake that lasts for 7 years.
Right.
So the whole point of a Twinkie was to take the place of the cake, but it can be on the shelf for 7 years.
But that's a bad thing. But that's a bad thing.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're pretend it's like putting vegetables in the cake. Get it? Make your kid eat real food and be like, look, it's just like a Twinkie. You see? You got it? It's brilliant. All right. A much trickier task was perfecting the cream injector. Cream is in quotation marks. Standard confectionery injectors, Mr. Aronson said, did not have the power to force the filling into each cake's dense interior.
Oh, you should see. Let me tell you something. You should see what happens to a Twinkie when you don't have the power to force the cream in there. Oh, it's ugly. Ugly, ugly
it's
stuff.
Like
Twinkie everywhere.
It's like putting duct tape around your hamster. Anyway. The solution was to increase the injector's size so it was slightly bigger than the cake itself. You can get out of the pharmacy. And I don't want to tell you what aisle.
You need to stop right there.
And I don't want to tell you what aisle that goes in.
That is so
ugly.
And you
just force it on in there. Aware that replicating a Twinkie's exact taste was unfeasible, they focused on offering an array of non-traditional versions of the cake, in addition to a yellow cake and cream option. Okay, it's better than a Twinkie, ladies and gentlemen. It's better. Now, it did so, Mr. Aaron's Interstate Bakeries, which owns Twinkie, reviewed and approved the recipes before the bakery sets released last September. It did so, Mr. Aronson said, to make sure that the ersatz Twinkies, while tasty, weren't too similar to the real thing. These Twinkies taste like food.
So, I don't believe that was in the article. Hold on, I'm looking at the article. I don't see that,
that was my
anywhere.
Like, we thought it was going to taste like a Twinkie, but it tastes like food. Nothing like a real Twinkie,
But this kind of stuff just absolutely amazes me. It truly does, because Twinkies were invented so that people didn't have to make cake, okay? You wanted to be able to put something in your closet for 2 or 3 years and be able to send it off with your kid in his school lunchbox.
And it was cheap. And it was
okay?
easy.
And it was cheap and it was easy, and that was the whole idea. So now we're taking this pasteurized, processed food stuff.
But we're not. But we're taking a mold and putting real food in it so it looks like a Twinkie. I love that. But you know what? You hit the nail on the head a little bit earlier, Mark, when you said the thing about this article. And the article is in the February 12th section of the New York issue of the New York Times. And it's called True Imitations of Real McCoy. And you can look it up at the Times online. But the article's not a joke.
The article is, come give your kid Twinkies.
The article.
They're the coolest thing ever. Twinkie the kid. Remember him? He's my pal.
What's funny about the article is the article doesn't know it's funny. That's what's funny. We're here to point that out to you.
You know what is funny? That every one of our listeners know that the article's funny.
Right,
because it really is.
You can check that out online, New York Times, February 12, 2006. True Imitations of Real McCoy, Brendan L. Corner. If you want to trick your kids who want to have a Twinkie into having a real cake, you can do so by picking up the Twinkie.
We promise you a much more serious show the rest of the way.
Patrick O'Connell coming to talk about real food in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, welcome back to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest today is Patrick O'Connell. He's the chef owner of the Inn at Little Washington, one of the best restaurants in America and a personal favorite of Mark and mine. He's written a beautiful book, which is Patrick O'Connell's Refined American Cuisine, the book of the Inn at Little Washington. Welcome to the show, Chef O'Connell.
Thank you very much. Great
chef,
to be here.
So glad to have you on the show today. We're very honored.
Thank you, Mark.
You started out trying to be an actor way back when, and you become a chef. How exactly does that happen?
Well, it was the period of our country's development where parents were rather horrified if their offspring gravitated toward the restaurant business.
Yeah, I remember. I was gravitating towards the restaurant business at that time, and my parents were horrified.
It had about the same prestige as joining the circus.
Right. And, you know, there are other similarities as well, now that I think of it, to joining the circus.
So they would settle for anything but the restaurant business. And since I loved being in plays in school and that sort of thing, they were amenable to paying for a somewhat of an education in theater, but the whole time I went to college, I continued to work in restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And I soon realized that that was far more exciting and a kind of theatrical experience all of its own.
You've probably become more famous becoming a chef than you would have as an actor. Look at it that way.
Well, you certainly eat better.
Yeah, that's a fact, huh?
And more consistently.
When I graduated college, in hopes that I would go into a professional life, my mother bought me 5 brand new suits. And I said, great, now I can be the maitre d'.
Actually, my dad's, I'm 40, we've owned our own restaurant for 14 years or so, and my dad's still waiting for me to get over this phase and finally
That's
go to law school.
Yeah, exactly.
Now you didn't just become a chef, you became Patrick O'Connell. Your restaurant is amazing, mm-hmm. and built up from nothing. And for those who don't know about the Inn at Little Washington, this is a beautiful place like you don't find in America. I mean, the fireplaces in most rooms, and they're wood fireplaces, and someone walks around and tends to the wood fireplace. When the gentlemen come down for dinner, Mark and I stayed there with Lou, our third partner, and our chef many years ago. And when we came down for dinner, a woman gave us all boutonnieres to wear at dinner, and just every detail was seen to. You're a little nut, aren't you? I mean, you're feeling a little crazy. Crazy, right? What made you decide to take it so far?
I guess the background in theater allowed me to see it as a film in which each guest was the star,
mm-hmm.
and to view every facet of it as a theatrical experience in your own life. Not overly done, but as a beautiful, moody movie, as your ultimate fantasy. And you find that you can't just create one fantasy. You have to intuit what the guest's fantasy is and deliver that and even raise the bar and give mm-hmm. them something beyond which they imagined could happen.
Well, you guys aren't just intuiting it because, I mean, at your beautiful, beautiful restaurant, everything happens for a reason. Right down to the what color boutonniere you get, is there's a reason for that as well, is there not?
Well, it serves as a communication vehicle for the staff.
Mm-hmm.
A boutonniere allows the staff to know who is in the house. In other words, a guest staying upstairs,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to someone who's just a guest at dinner. And then they can also tell by the color of the boutonniere the number of nights that a guest has been with us.
Well, so, do you have any boutonnieres for guys, people who are like real jerks?
We have a communication system which covers that.
It's a little more subtle, however.
Well, we rate the guest's mood on a 1 to 10
on
their
this.
Arrival. And that goes into our computer system. So it shows up on their dupes or their kitchen orders. So that basically everybody in the operation is plugged into the potential that somebody could be not too receptive to the
mm-hmm.
experience, or maybe having a little marital dispute, or maybe just generally cranky or hard to please. So instead of ignoring them, which is usually the reaction,
I mean, that's what most restaurant people what they would say in that situation is,
exactly.
Okay, they're cranky, write them off.
Don't go near table 14. They're
mm-hmm.
having a fight. It has nothing to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I maintain it has everything to do with us, because how are they going to enjoy the fruits of our labors if they're not in a good mood? So we lavish attention on them. We turn it around. We turn it into a game for the staff, and we bring it up, and we track it. And it has the incredible effect on the team of proving to them that they can turn even the most difficult guest around just by focusing on them.
So somebody comes in and it's as a 2, and it's up to the staff, has a competition to try and get them up to an 8 by the time they leave.
Yes, and, well, 9 or above.
Yeah. 9 or above is
excellent.
That follows with their dessert order, you see, so it's the final order coming into the kitchen. And we will collectively do anything we possibly can do to reach that goal.
Now, I have a question. Now that this has gotten out there a little bit, do you have people coming in and pretending to be more upset than they really are?
Sometimes. And the fun thing is they want to know what their mood rating was or is, at any moment.
When we're done with the show, you got to go back in your books and you got to look and see what our mood rate
was
when we were there.
I have to tell you, anytime that we're taking a couple of days off and going down to the Inn at Little Washington to eat Patrick O'Connell's food and stay at his inn, our mood rating starts at a 9, so there's not really a lot of work
We definitely came in at 9 or 10. That's no issue.
Our guest is Patrick O'Connell. He's the author of Refined American Cuisine, The Inn at Little Washington. He's the chef owner of The Inn at Little Washington. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine LaGuardia Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Chef Patrick O'Connell. He is the chef owner of the Inn at Little Washington, one of the best restaurants in America, and a personal favorite of Mark and mine. We were talking about the little things that you do at the Inn at Little Washington before the break, how you sort of rate a customer and your whole staff, and it's public knowledge, you rate a customer's mood when they come in, and then you make it your goal to elevate their mood by the time they leave. Now, the Inn at Little Washington is a very special, very elegant place that is just one of Mark and my favorites.
A true little jewel box.
Do you ever get somebody in there, though, who just, they don't get it, and you're not what they're looking for, and they're in the wrong place, and there's nothing you can do about it?
Well, we had someone say that the drive weeds all the wrong people out. It's 67 miles from Washington, D.C., in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And you don't come usually for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You don't come to see and be seen or en route to the theater. You have to make a little pilgrimage. And more often than not, we have a proportion of our clients who feel that it couldn't possibly live up to the expectations or what they call the hype that they've heard, and that they may be disappointed. So we've also broken the dining experience down into 5 stages, inspired by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work on death and dying, in which she described death, the 5 stages of dying. And I thought that was such an intriguing idea to take a universal process and break it down into 5 distinct phases that I applied it to the dining experience. So the first phase of the dining experience in a grand restaurant is anticipation. And it can begin years in advance of someone's actual arrival, when they begin thinking and dreaming and fantasizing about what it would be like to go there.
Patrick
and
O'Connell, we're going to take a quick break.
Sure.
We're going to come back after the news, and we're going to talk about how you turned the 5 stages of dying into the 5 stages of dining, and I can't wait to hear how this is going to go, because I'm really intrigued. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest is Patrick O'Connell, the chef owner of the Inn at Little Washington and author of the book Patrick O'Connell's Refined American Cuisine. We'll be talking more with him after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Patrick O'Connell. We're having a great conversation with him. He's the owner of one of Mark and my favorite restaurants and one of the best restaurants in the country, The Inn at Little Washington, and his book is Patrick O'Connell's Refined American Cuisine. Patrick, before the break, you were talking about how you had taken the 5 stages of dining and tried to, and sort of translated that into the 5 stages of dining, with the first being anticipation. And what's the next stage of dining?
Well, the next phase we call trepidation, and that generally happens at the moment a guest walks through the front door of a restaurant, and I like to describe that as their fantasy colliding with reality. And that's a critical moment because they previously are floating high on this sense of anticipation, and then they kind of crash into reality as they walk through that front door. And they bring with them all sorts of what we call restaurant bruises, negative experiences that have happened to them since their very dining adventure.
And we all have those.
We all have those, regardless of how wealthy, sophisticated, well-traveled we are. Terrible things have happened to us in restaurants.
And how do you deal with that? What's your prescription for dealing with that moment in the dining experience?
Well, the first one is to be fully present and aware that that baggage is walking into the room, and to exude the confidence that it's okay and it's expected. You can handle it. You're fully prepared for it. And I think what I sometimes say to our staff is we're not so much teaching here a skill as consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to be awake, present, and someone once said that the role of a great psychotherapist was to be present for what is, and we often describe that as the role of a good waiter.
So
you are sort of a neutral foil for anything which the guest might be bringing into the equation.
And that talks also of having sensitive people who have common sense so that you don't teach the specific things to do if you're just aware of it.
Precisely.
Sort of,
and I think the failure on the part of even the best-intentioned restaurants today, especially the chains, is they think in terms of a formula, and they think that if you do A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, everyone will be happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the idea of a chain, though, is let's make 80% of the people happy.
True.
And that's all that we need to do, and 80% of them will return, and we'll lose 20% of them, and we'll refill it with our next commercial of showing you disgusting food.
Remember in fast food restaurants, you're as interchangeable as the food to them. So. Okay, so what's the next phase of the dining experience?
Well, after you're over the trepidation and you've been reassured and brought to your table, only after you're seated in your table, which American clients regard as the piece of real estate which they have purchased, and they have not actually made the transaction until they are fully seated in their space. And this is why people are so annoyed these days at being invited to have a drink in a bar or the other room or a waiting area, regardless of how beautiful it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's their idea that they are purchasing a table,
right,
their table, and that's what they want.
They want their space.
They want their space. So they're not actually physically aware of their surroundings until they've been seated and they have a second sip of their first drink. Only then do they actually arrive physically. They don't know where they are prior to that. I mean, you could have dead bodies lying all over the room, and they might not see them until they get into their table.
So that's pretty insightful. That's the moment when they're looking to you.
That's showtime
for them.
Exactly. And at that point, they begin an inspection process. As they arrive physically, they begin to look around. And unconsciously, in an animal sort of sense, they are looking for flaws.
Mm-hmm.
We're glad they're not marking their territory.
Please go on and ignore my partner.
They are looking to see if the place is above or beneath their standards, their expectations, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a critical juncture also. And then no matter how many courses they've had, you can't get them over the major hurdle or major hump until, particularly with the American psyche, you deliver the main course. And if asked or checked in upon prior to that, they will often say, everything's been great so far.
So far.
Wow.
You haven't delivered the main course.
The meat.
You're still on trial for the meat. And the odd thing is that no matter how small the courses or portions are, even though the main course might be no different in its actual significance than all the previous courses, for example, even on a tasting menu, mm-hmm, you haven't passed their test until you've delivered the meat.
It may actually be smaller.
It may be smaller. Yeah. It may be smaller.
That's very insightful.
Yeah. So only after the second or third bite of their meat will they allow themselves to sort of fall into this, what we call a state of fulfillment, or again, this sort of animal satisfaction.
Uh-huh.
And because they're still on edge prior to that, because you haven't passed the test.
I want to draw a parallel. We had on the show just recently. We had an author of the woman who wrote The Sex Life of Food, Bunny Crumpacker, and she talks about food in a very animalistic way and relates it to sex very much like you're talking about.
Oh, it is.
Well.
It is. It's such a whole oral animal kind of thing with their space, their territory. Someone once described our restaurant rather lovingly by saying, if they were a dove, they could lay their eggs there.
That was a very bizarre patron. I want to point that out, Patrick. So what is the next phase? We're talking about the five phases of the
right.
dining experience. What is the fourth phase of the dining experience?
Well, we have already, we've done anticipation long in advance, trepidation at the moment of arrival, inspection, which happens after you're seated and have the second sip of your first drink, then the animal fulfillment at the presentation of the main course. And then the fifth and last is evaluation. And that takes place or begins either just prior to the presentation of the check or after the check is presented. And usually if it's a party of two, a married couple, the wife will sort of look over, raise her eyebrows at her husband, and whisper, "How much was it?" And he will whisper back the price. And if she smiles, that's great. That's fine. And they begin a process of comparing it to meals of other similar cost mm-hmm. and
wow.
other great experiences of their life. But this phase will continue for sometimes 6 weeks to 3 months after their visit, when they return to the office and people say, "Well, how was it? Oh, and how much did it cost? How much did it cost? How much did you pay? And would you go back? Would you do it again?" And they're continually reminded and having to think of, would they go back again?
Mm-hmm.
So at that phase, we like to hear, for example, usually they'll come and visit the kitchen while they're here because we have a spectacular kitchen to look at. And if they're making plans to return and talking about who they're going to bring on their next visit and talking about their next birthday or anniversary, we feel that we've gotten them successfully through the evaluation stage.
You know, it's funny because sometimes I'll go to up to patrons and almost try and get them started in exactly that process by saying, "Well, how was everything? How did you enjoy everything?"
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can see that they begin that evaluation.
Exactly.
At that time.
Yeah, but you know,
exactly.
But you know what's interesting, Patrick? You talk about being present, and you know, it's funny because I hear the words come out of your mouth, Mark, and I'm sure that corporations say the same thing. Okay, it's time to go and ask the guest how was everything. But you talk about being present. I go to chain restaurants all the time, and some you know teeny bopper comes over and says, "So how was everything?" And she doesn't really care.
Oh,
you
right,
know
exactly. Yeah.
She doesn't really
exactly.
Care, you know
exactly.
And I think that
that's,
you know,
more
she,
annoying than not asking.
It is.
Right.
It's
yeah.
funny. You know, she's been told this is the time to come over in the meal.
Right.
And do
can
it.
I bring you your check now?
Right.
It's time for you to go.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
You talk about being present. People know. I mean, Patrick. You know,
of
we
course.
Were there. You didn't know who we were. We had not met before, and we met you, and you took us through the kitchen afterwards. And when people asked us in your place, how is everything, it's because they want to know.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And anyway,
it's because they wanted to make sure we were a nine.
Our guest, we didn't know that at the time. Our guest is Patrick O'Connell. He's the author of Refined American Cuisine, and he's the chef owner of one of our favorite restaurants, the Inn at Little Washington. We're going to link you to the Inn at Little Washington on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, and we'll be talking more with him about his wonderful restaurant and American cuisine in general in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design. 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Francis and Mark from Steve Lutz and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Patrick O'Connell. He is the chef owner of the Inn at Little Washington, one of the best restaurants in America and one of Mark and my favorite restaurants. He's also the author of Patrick O'Connell's Refined American Cuisine. You can find out all about that by going to our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
So, Patrick, one of the things you were just talking about was how you associate the five stages of dying with, and you have your own five stages of dining, which is its own kind of magical thing. But one of the things that's not in your stages that is in the five stages of dying is denial. And I noticed that your waiters are never allowed to utter the word no under any circumstance.
Is that true?
Absolutely. There are so many pleasanter ways to answer a guest.
All right, I say to your waiter, may I light the restaurant on fire, please? They say,
not this restaurant.
sometimes they will begin by saying, actually.
Nicely done. You know, it's funny, but there's so much power to that, and we teach our people all the time, when you talk to people on the phone, rather than say no, to come up with an alternative.
Right.
It's like when you go to the bank, right?
And
you ask, you know, can I get $100 in pennies?
Right.
If the woman says, No, you can't, because the rules are that you can't get more than $10 in pennies.
Right.
Your animal response is to get your back up.
Exactly.
What do you mean? I'm a customer here. Whereas if you say,
I don't have that many pennies.
I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. Well, what do you want to say? Yes,
always,
you can.
There's always a consolation or alternative.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't matter what it is. So, again, it's with the idea of never being confrontational, never disappointing. And in a fantasy experience, no just doesn't happen.
Right.
That destroys the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
It punctures the bubble, and suddenly you're in reality.
Right. Well, the thing is, you can take someone's forward motion and push them right or left where you need them to be without stopping them, you know. And I think that's what a no does, is it stops the action, and people react negatively to no.
Because it's a negative.
One of the things about your restaurant, we went and we stayed at your inn as well, which I think most of your patrons do, right?
Well, we only currently have 15 guest rooms, so 30 people every night are in the house.
Now, yours is one of the hardest reservations in the world to get for your little jewel box restaurant, which is attached to your inn. How can somebody be guaranteed that they're going to be able to dine in your restaurant?
Well, if they reserve a room and stay overnight with us, they're guaranteed a dinner reservation, certainly.
Okay, and you're in the middle of nowhere, Patrick, so stay.
Not to mention what I will tell everybody in my listening audience, this is no lie, easily the most comfortable bed I've ever slept on in my entire life.
Working fireplaces, go when it's cold outside, I love it. In addition to the five stages of dining that we talked about that you've broken down and analyzed and philosophy by which you run your restaurant, there was another aspect as well.
Well, we believe that these days more than ever people are coming to a grand restaurant looking for more than great food. The great food is expected, and even fine service is expected. But they're sort of starving for a kind of connection with someone else, and they want to share this occasion somehow. Basically, we maintain that they all have a story, a backstory of what they're doing there, the significance of their visit, and what it means for them in their life, and they're looking for a witness to that, to reinforce it, to be present for it. No different than the ancient wedding ceremony when you have a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And the witness doesn't even have to be a friend. It just has to be somebody who you saw, watch this experience, and was clued into what was going on and understood the significance of it. So mechanically, we divide the room into two parts, and we have two hosts or head waiters. And their job is to, through intermittent, fractured conversation during the course of someone's visit, extract from them the significance for them personally of what the experience is all about for them. Either, you know, it's simple. If it's a birthday or an anniversary or some kind of little celebration of their meeting or something of this kind.
All right. I have one other thing when to ask you about you running your restaurants. When we went down, Mark and I think it's a great thing to have a chef's table, but Mark and I almost never sit at the chef's table.
Uh-huh.
Because I work in a kitchen. I want to be in the dining room, for God's sake.
Of course.
And it's so nice out there with the chairs and everything.
With that comfy real estate.
Exactly. Exactly.
But we did have a tour of the kitchen, and we did meet you briefly.
Uh-huh.
But when we walked into your kitchen, it was, of course, spotless, and it was beautiful operation and work. But there were Gregorian chants playing. Never seen that before. Does that happen all the time?
It's all the time, yeah. It's a calming influence. I like to say that it reduces cursing. but most images of kitchens, especially those you see on television, are these high-pressured pressure cooker situations where people are screaming and the tension is, unbearable. And people are cutting themselves and accidents are happening. And it's just a very, very high stress zone. And my feeling is, after all the years of sort of living through that, that I've tried to do the opposite and create a really soothing, calming environment where people have plenty of space, they have lots of natural light, and a beautiful view, soothing music, candles, and I believe that it is reflected in the quality of their work.
So do we. Our guest is Patrick O'Connell. He's the owner of the Inn at Little Washington. We'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is the esteemed Patrick O'Connell. He owns the Inn at Little Washington, which is one of the best restaurants in America. You can find out more about it by going to our website at restaurantguysradio.com. And he's also the author of a beautiful cookbook, Patrick O'Connell's Refined American Cuisine.
So, Patrick, I have to say, and we're coming to the close of the show. So one of the things I just like to ask you about is, how you close your evenings with your guests who are staying in the hotel itself. Little port and a little cookies by the bed. So much better than the after 8 minutes. Such a nicer touch, I have to say.
Well, again, it's an attempt to create a unique memory for them. And we have mascots who are Dalmatians. And there's a little note from one of the dogs with some edible
biscuits.
Human dog bone cookies that you can dip in the port.
Can we close the show on one funny story? There was an inn that I used to stay at, and where I used to stay in Lambertville, New Jersey, owned by a lovely couple, and it's really great. I still go and stay there once in a while. It's certainly not a super elegant experience, but it's a nice place to go and get away, and it's not too far from where we live. And they do a very similar kind of things. They leave a decanter of sherry in the room and a couple of glasses and some cookies for you to help yourself with. But they leave it on the radiator. and I've mentioned something to them a couple of times, but if you go and it's sort
of
old...
Nobody drinks the sherry. We don't understand. We always leave it out.
So my recommendation is, if you're going to go to Lambertville, go in the summertime.
Well, Patrick, I'm sure it's imparting a nice scent into the room.
Yeah, it is, but the port's kind of thick. The sherry's kind of thick.
Sherry potpourri.
Patrick, you've been great. Thank you for taking the time of your
really
schedule
wonderful.
To talk with
Thanks
us.
So much.
Thank you, Mark and Francis. It's a pleasure.
Hey, and it's worth the ride down to go to the Inn of Little Washington. It's a super special place. You really need to stay overnight. It is in the middle of nowhere, which is exactly the point.
When you're talking about dining experience and you're talking about rolling that into a place to stay, I can say that I have no better experience in the country than at the Inn of Little Washington.
And if you want to see the kind of food he does, which is really great, and he's a self-taught chef, and it's a very unique style of food, you can pick up Patrick O'Connell's Refined American Cuisine, the Inn at Little Washington. You can find that more about that on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I hope you've enjoyed the hour. This is Francis Schacht.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.